Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, intelligent movement through randomness, Andy. It's not a new Radiohead album. It's Frank Vogel's description of what the Lakers are trying to do offensively. We'll talk about that, the collaborative effort that goes into figuring out who's going to be in the Lakers starting lineup, and numbers about the Lakers 0-6 preseason. All that on Locked On Lakers on Monday, coming up now.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, all throughout the season. Thank you guys so much for doing it. We really appreciate it. We try to get this thing up nice and early for you. So whenever you start your day, Locked On Lakers is there for you. The Lakers, they kick off the season on Tuesday night, obviously. Everybody is super excited about it. And, but slightly understanding, a little nervous, and definitely more understanding, I think, at this point, that the Lakers are a work in progress. Whether you're talking players or coaches going into the weekend, certainly in Sunday's media availability, it came up again. Patience, work in progress. They are trying to do some new things, particularly on offense, that, hopefully bear fruit down the road, but are, there's a learning curve here, Andy, and guys are definitely all emphasizing it.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Sunday after practice, Melo said that the Lakers are going to be ready on Tuesday. But as he also noted, and he kept insisting, we're going to be ready. Like, that phrase kept coming up. But as he also noted, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come together perfectly on Tuesday. As mm-hmm. he even said, it's not likely to come together perfectly on Tuesday, but they're still going to be ready. And it's just this company line that you're hearing from a lot of veterans on this team that combines confidence with big picture patience.
Can you imagine, though, how amazeballs it would be if it actually did come together perfectly on Tuesday? They just nailed it. Like, here we go, 82-0. Let's do this.
I guess it would be the first time a team decided that it was worth playing possum during the preseason.
That's right.
It feels like you're shooting your shot a little bit early in terms of surprise attacks with the league. But
gotcha.
Frank Vogel's got a championship under his belt on his resume. I do not, so I'm not going to question his methodology. Also, Frank Vogel did note that Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn practiced on Sunday. Wayne Ellington didn't. The availabilities for all three Tuesday night are still being determined. But
sounds, though, like Ellington may not be available, but Nunn and Monk, if things go well, probably, if they recover from practice, at the very least, they're on track.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, Wayne Ellington had been described before by Vogel as somebody that, if it were a real game, could have been out there. So who knows? I mean, they may have just decided he's getting better.
Andy, as the old saying goes, you don't mess with groins.
Wayne Ellington's a hamstring.
Well, you don't mess with those either. All right. So, but one of the reasons, the continuity, that all gets to the continuity question, which we've talked about, not having a consistent lineup in and out throughout the preseason. That has a lot to do with the 0-6. And Kevin Pelton of ESPN has some really interesting numbers about whether or not that's meaningful that we'll get to before the end of the show. But it's not just the continuity of players and guys learning each other. As LeBron James has noted, as Frank Vogel noted into the weekend, they're really learning an entirely new system. And guys like Krantzis McBasketball, Tim, at the Lakers Exceptionalism podcast, obviously Pete Zayas does great work around this, Alex Regla at Silver Screen and Roll. Andy, people who literally, and I mean this literally, know how to cut up film, forget mm-hmm. interpret it, like literally just know how to do it. Like, I don't know how to do that.
That's not true. We cut up film on this show.
No, but I can't do the thing where you take it and you make it like the little, you stop it and start it and put arrows in there. I don't know how to do that.
I'm not taking away anything from those guys because, they are all friends of the show. I believe they've all been on some incarnation of some show that we've done, if not mm-hmm. specifically this show. I don't actually think it's that hard.
Well, I didn't say it was hard, Andy. I just said I don't know how to do it.
Stop being so impressed by him, man. It's not that impressive.
Yeah, Pete, you're not impressive. Yeah. But anyway, so as we always do, we recommend following guys like him, Jovan Buha at The Athletic.
But not Bill Orem.
But not, don't, Bill doesn't bring much to the table. No, be honest. No. Great beard. Mm-hmm. But the you know, if you follow these guys and you see the clips, the Lakers have been really, it really is true. They're not just doing, it's players and guys moving on both sides of the ball, action on both sides of the ball, timing, reads, options, and things like that, all designed to keep constant movement on the floor and find ways to clear out as much space as they can. As Frank Vogel said, we just want to clear the elbows as much as we can. If that means Russ or Rondo cutting out there, great. If that means Melo or Monk or Kendrick Nunn or somebody else up there, that's great too. We want to give our playmakers as much space as we can, just emphasizing the movement off those cuts and then reshapes, the reshapes out of those is something that we're trying to do. Just to keep going, what we're asking guys to do is make reads off each other. If A happens, B has got to happen. If B happens, C has got to happen. And trying to teach them intelligent movement through randomness. That's something that we're preaching this year. That takes time. You know, when you're talking, once you started to get into reads, Andy, if A happens, B's got to happen. If B's got to happen, C's got to happen. Now you're looking at not just guys learning each other, but guys learning the floor and learning each other at the same time. And that explains why the offense at time looked a little gummy in the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. First of all, just what they're trying to do, I think sounds really fun to watch if it's actually cooking and clicking. And God knows that would be really welcome considering the offense over the last 2 years. Often quite the slog, Brian. And on top of that, seemingly not always that creative. Like, you know, there are people who really just understand play designs beyond just, you know, the entertainment factor.
Last year, the offense looked like it was designed by us.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, when you watch it, even if you're not somebody who can diagram a play, if you watch enough stuff, you can recognize, oh, that's pretty clever. That's not. A lot of what the Lakers were doing fell not under clever. Not. But not also, clever. Too, I thought it was really interesting in the way Vogel was giving this unspoken acknowledgement that certain lineups may not have the requisite spacing. So you create space through movement. And it's this reminder that you can manipulate the floor even in this era of NBA basketball that is all about, you know, three-point shooting and hyper-spacing of the floor, you can do that through more than just shooting. Like, you know, the spacing does matter, but there's more than one type of spacing.
Shooting does matter, but there's more than one way to make space, like you right. said. And LeBron talked about this too. It also, what I like about this philosophically, other than movement in sports, is almost always good. Like it's very rare that you encounter something where like, let's move more. Let's, you know, move the ball. Let's move people, you know, in any kind of team sport like that isn't a good idea. It's good in hockey. It's good in soccer. It's good in basketball. It is always sort of beneficial, I think, from a philosophical standpoint to have that. But it also is designed to mitigate some of the weaknesses that the Lakers might have with spacing. Some of the traditional criticisms of a guy like Russell Westbrook when he is off ball, which is that he doesn't move a lot, that he doesn't cut enough or whatever. If you design an offense where Westbrook, who is 100% a team player, that's not the issue, where he, for the whole thing to work, he's got to do those things too. You know, then it's just designed into the offense. It's not a question of whether or not can Russ remember. it's just like, this is part of what they do. And if you can make it work, then you can take advantage of AD's playmaking, of LeBron's playmaking, obviously, and Westbrook's playmaking. But, you know, Carmelo Anthony is a good passer, and, you know, THT and some of these other players, and keep eyeballs. And this is something that LeBron talked about heading into the weekend. You keep eyeballs from focusing on LeBron on one side of the floor or Westbrook on another side of the floor or whatever it might be. That team becomes very difficult to defend, even if they're playing a little bit inside the three-point line and in tight spaces in the interior. And you've seen it, Andy. I think we talked about it on Friday. Like, they've had a lot of good possessions in tight spaces. You can do that when people move.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up really quickly before we get into some other elements of the offense and just what the Lakers are doing in the preseason, they ended up in this discussion on Twitter at Cam Brothers that involved Pete Sayas, Anthony Irwin, the former host of this show, about the comparison
between the cantankerous former host of this show.
Well, I mean, it's the branding. That's part of Anthony's branding. But there was a comparison made, I want to say it was actually by Anthony, with these Lakers, you know, dealing with a lack of continuity and learning an entirely new offense versus the Lakers in the 2013 season, that this is going to be fun season with Kobe, Nash, Dwight Powell, and how Mike Brown decided to use the Princeton offense for five games that he coached that season before he ended up getting fired. And that was a decision that caught a lot of people, including the two of us who covered that team very closely at the time for ESPN, as a very curious decision, one that we did not see coming. And the big difference with that versus what the Lakers are doing right now is Mike Brown's decision, and we both love Mike Brown as a person, made absolutely no sense whatsoever. Like the idea
didn't
that
at the time, didn't now.
No, the idea that you are bringing in Steve Nash, you know, one of the great offensive orchestrators of all time, and then putting in a system that will take the ball out of his hands very often, simply made no sense. There also, too, was just so much other shit that went on during that season, including just off the top of my head, Steve Nash breaking his leg in game two, Mike Brown, as we said, getting fired five games in, the replacement for him turning into this contest of Phil Jackson versus Mike D'Antoni because the Lakers botched the whole thing and made it seem like publicly they were choosing one versus the other. Mike D'Antoni set up to lose there, Dwight's resistance to running pick and roll, Pau discontented with Mike D'Antoni, making it sound like they couldn't win with him in there, and Kobe tearing his Achilles. Yep. Dr. Buss's death. A lot. It went during that season.
Extra. So yeah, these are things to remember as we get into that conversation about Kevin Pelton and his really interesting analysis of the 0-6 preseason. So we'll get to that. Do want to thank everybody for signing up and subscribing to the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel. That thing continues to grow, and we want to make that a resource for you over the course of the season. Next, though, Kent Bazemore said something that I think will make Lakers fans extremely happy about what goes into being a starter for this team. We'll talk about that next. And so we'll do that as soon as I tell you about Prize Picks, Andy. You're an NBA fanatic, right?
Yes. I'm
right. Have you heard about
Prize
Picks?
How else would I be doing the show for?
I can't. Well, money. You could just
That's
be true. Really greedy.
That's true.
But have you heard about Prize Picks?
Yes. Tell me more.
Okay, good. Otherwise, we have to stop. It's a daily fantasy made easy, and I love this, and I know you will too. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game out there on the market. It offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator, and all the superstar players, all the bench guys that are only recording a handful of minutes here, that doesn't matter. You got the whole range of dudes. Prize Picks offers any prop that you can think of, from yardage, touchdowns, interceptions thrown at Andy, tease. I'm mixing sports, and Prize Picks lets you do that. You can take the over under on LeBron combined with the under on Mahomes on the same entry. All of this stuff works, and use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play to get it done. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. It's like, you know, they make car theft movies about that kind of theme. All of your users, that's anybody who comes in from this, you get a 100% instant deposit match of $100. Just be sure to use the promo code NBA. Again, put that deposit in, use the promo code NBA, 100% instant match up to $100. So don't hesitate. Check out Prize Picks now. Use the promo code NBA. Go to your app store and download the app today. Prize Picks, Andy, it's daily fantasy made easy.
Okay, so here's the scenario. You got one device that lets you catch the game live, the other one that lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you got your best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend who heard from this guy who knows this kid going out with this girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. Her login to get the good stuff. There is a simpler way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle, and it's a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings all your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. So there's no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. The best part, no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter, the confusion. Get your damn TV together with DirecTV Stream. Learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. A compatible device is required. Content varies by package.
So Tuesday night, Andy, the Lakers play a for reals game against the Golden State Warriors. They're going to play another one on Friday and 80 more after that. And we don't yet know who is going to be in the starting lineup. Aside from the big three, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. And how they fill that thing out is obviously a huge point of interest for everyone. But it's going to be a collaborative effort. Frank Vogel talked about it, that they're going to talk to the captains. They're going to consult with Rob Pelinka and kind of figure out the best way to do this. And everybody's going to have a little voice, at least not everybody. we're not, but the people who matter are going to have a voice on how this goes. And it does seem a little bit more that DeAndre Jordan might end up starting. Like, they could go back to that traditional thing, which is, I know, obviously, Andy, not everybody's first choice. And then we just start playing the ratio game. Is he playing 10 minutes a night, 15 minutes a night? And is AD still playing at least half his minutes at center? In which case, it's probably fine. You know, first of all, what do you think about the sort of the input thing, the collaborative thing, and then where it may end up?
I mean, I think it's really interesting, just the idea of a front office, coaching staff, captains, you know, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Austin Reeves. Yeah, like everybody putting their heads together, figuring out the best way to do this. I'm not going to lie. I don't know how typical that is. I mean, like, I know the league is becoming, generally speaking, more collaborative, I think, when it comes to players and front offices and players having...
Well, certainly coaching staffs in front offices, I think, yeah. You know, but in terms of the consulting of the players on individual lineup choices like that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm really...
That's a good I mean, I'm agreeing with you. It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pleading my own ignorance. I have no idea how common this actually is. I think a lot of times it depends on the stature of the players that you would involve in the first place. And obviously, you know, I mean, as much as LeBron likes to claim that he is not the general manager of this team, Carmelo Anthony actually said he's the damn general manager of the team. You know, I mean, he's said before that once Russ got traded, they had to figure out the supporting cast, and LeBron called him and said, "You're on the supporting cast." And it was really that simple. So I guess I kind of feel like, you know, the way it's similar to how I talked about this before. I remember maybe a few weeks ago when we were talking about the perceived power of clutch and, you know, like the idea of how much control them or CAA or any of these agencies that are pretty in bed with certain teams or appear to be, or just have power around the league. How good are you ultimately at making those decisions? Because, you know, if LeBron is good at playing GM, or if LeBron is good at coming up with floor combinations that work for the Lakers, then you know what? More power to him having that much juice, because if it leads to the right decisions and he's as smart a player as this league has ever seen, I don't mind it. It really only matters if he is asserting himself in a way that he's not good at.
I think, yeah, and I think it doesn't make much sense in the context the Lakers are operating in when you have these three guys who are doing a lot. I mean, look, I get it. We got to figure it out. They're going to design offenses and this and that. But ultimately, too, you have to do whatever you possibly can do. And that gets back to what they're trying to do offensively to maximize the skill sets of these three guys. The purpose of the supporting cast is not to make Kendrick Nunn shine. It's not to make Malik Monk shine or THT or those guys become featured players. They're going to have good games. They're going to have moments, and hopefully will be able to thrive because of the other stuff that's happening. It's to enhance the big three. It's all in service of what makes those guys the best. And in that context, especially when you've got the mind of LeBron James, especially to not consult them. I'm not talking about like final decision-making, like, or, you know, hey guys, we kind of need to do it this way and here's why, but I don't know why you would have that group of dudes and not at least ask the question.
Okay. Here's a great example of, you know, and it's not apples to apples in the sense that like the organization was in a different place and what we're talking about isn't exactly the same thing, but I think it is an example of just when things obviously should be run past your star players. Remember when Phil Jackson eventually did retire for good and Kobe very openly wanted Brian Shaw to be his replacement.
Yes.
And the Lakers ultimately ended up going with Mike Brown. And, you know, ultimately this was the front office's decision, Dr. Buss's decision. This is something that they ultimately come up with. Kobe was not consulted at all in that process. Like Kobe said, he basically learned about it when we in the media at the time, I believe we were working for ESPN, we learned about it.
Right.
That should not happen.
And, like, and to review, you mentioned this earlier in the show. It didn't work out.
No, it did not work out, but it also created a setup where guys are going into this more unhappy about it than they should be. And to be clear, Kobe should be consulted. That does not necessarily mean he should have gotten a vote. But he's Kobe flipping Bryant. Of course you are going to get his input. Of course you are going to make him feel like he is at least part of the process, because A, he's earned that. B, you don't want to piss that guy off. Like, it's just, it's not a good way to start the relationship between him and whoever would have replaced Phil.
Yeah, and just, and we'll get to Bazemore here in a second, because I think what Kent Bazemore's response is somebody who both of us think needs to be in the starting lineup, particularly with who they have available now, and may or may not be talked about, you know, what goes into that in a way that I think is very encouraging for what this team is looking forward to over the course of this season. But, you know, the other question is sort of mechanically that question of DeAndre Jordan. And we talked about it on Friday's show. Like, I would prefer he not play that much, because I think on balance, my guess is that he wouldn't be that good overall, night to night, 82 games. I think ultimately you would look up and see some good games, but more where it was like, I think they probably would have been better off without him. But the best game he played in the preseason was that sixth one, 15 minutes. He had double-digit rebounds. He was 6 of 7 from the floor, and he only played 15 minutes. Like, it was not like DJ was out there for a long time. Dwight was out there for a little while. The two of them combined played about half the game, and that leaves about half the minutes at center for Davis. Those lines shift a little bit over the course of the season. My ideal thing, as we've talked about, would be Davis plays center, starts at center, because it opens up more time for players that I think are better on this roster. I am willing to fall back to just counting the minutes. Like, when is he playing in the fourth quarter at that spot? And overall, is it still that sort of 60-40 Davis at center split we're looking for? If it doesn't come with him at the starting lineup, that's fine. If Jordan plays well. And if Jordan plays well, then a lot of this is moot, because the Lakers have a better player available to them. So I sort of encourage people not to get hung up so much on the aesthetics of starting, and you can kind of look at this thing more holistically.
And then, like, in terms of who ultimately ends up starting alongside LeBron, AD, and Russ, Kent Bazemore during Friday's practice said some interesting stuff about sort of his place in that question. You know, he's somebody that you and I both talked about as somebody who should start. He was actually asked Friday's practice whether or not he should, and his assessment of his own play I thought was really interesting. We can get into that coming up next. Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bars ever. Bars covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, and they are healthy. They're great for health conscious people if you're trying to lose or maintain weight while indulging in something that tastes awesome. They're low calorie, they're low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for the keto crowd. And as always, they taste great. You got the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut almond, salted caramel, banana bread, new flavors like cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream. They're perfect for someone like me, because I just love cool, interesting, different taste combinations, so you don't end up feeling like you're eating the same thing over and over, which gets boring, makes the whole thing feel like a slog. So go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCK15, you get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCK15, 15% off at builtbar.com.
With Kent Bazemore, he was asked whether or not, you know, he wants to start, should start, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, getting into the lineup, and, you know, does he want to? 1,000%. But that's a quote, 1,000% he would love to start for this team. But he also acknowledged that he shot, you know, 37% from the field, 36% from three, which actually isn't that bad, but 37% from the floor is not. And isn't happy with how he played. And this, I thought, was the most important thing. Said he wasn't really sure he's earned the opportunity to actually be a member of that starting five. Whether he gets in it or not, hasn't played in a way that he believes earned that opportunity. This, yeah, Andy, is a big contrast to what we saw last year.
Yeah, I mean, Bazemore said that he's, quote, I'm still figuring things out. We've had a lot of injuries, coach experimenting with lineups. A lot of times I watch myself on film and it's like a deer in the headlights just trying to read these guys. The most simple way I could put it is it's like having a new job. It's my fourth team in three seasons, new playbook, new personnel. It's a lot of moving parts around me, and it's just a little bit of an identity crisis at times. And beyond the fact that it's just really interesting to hear a guy be that candid about his play, framing it as a new job, you know, mm-hmm. offers some insight into the way Bazemore's thinking about this, but it also makes you think about what you do most typically, I think, most people, when you have a new job, which is not try to get off on the wrong foot, being too full of yourself to begin with. Case in point, Dennis Schroeder last year, who right out of the gate said, I want to start. I should start. I'm tired of doing the six-man thing. Like, this is who I want to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was heading into a contract year, and the Lakers surrendered draft capital and Danny Green to get him. And I think it put everybody from the beginning in an awkward place because, you know, I was very into the idea of the Schroeder signing, even though I was never that big of a Schroeder guy over his career. But it was in part because he was coming off a really good season in OKC. But more importantly, I assumed he would be playing off the bench. Mm-hmm. And he seemed like a perfect guy with Montrezl Harrell, the two guys who finished first and second for sixth man of the year the previous year, to combine up together. And I thought it would take a lot of that load off LeBron and Anthony Davis, him demanding that starting job. And I think really trying to squeeze the fear of losing him over the Lakers, you know, I don't want to say that that was the reason for any chemistry issues with this team because we cover them remotely. And it's really impossible to know this stuff one way or the other. And sometimes I wonder how much.
And also so many other things happen with the injuries in this. Like we never saw the universe in which the guys were healthy. Schroeder started, you know, other than those first 20, whatever, you're in 21-6. And it was working fine in terms of their record at the very least.
Right. I mean, like by contrast, you and I were around the 2013 that we talked about earlier with Kobe, Dwight, mm-hmm. Nash, Powell. That team had terrible chemistry. We witnessed it firsthand. Like, so I don't want to get out over my skis and trying to evaluate this thing. But I do think, though, that Schroeder laid down a bad marker in terms of just his priorities for the season. And, you know, it stuck out to me hearing Bazemore, who is also in a contract year himself, playing way below market value. You know, it jumped out at me as something that's like a continuation of a lot of these veterans saying, you know what, however coach wants to use me, it's fine. You know, they got to live up to it over the course of the season. Like, you know, that can be easier said than done. But it really did jump out at me as a very, very different tone setter than what we saw with Schroeder last year.
Well, I think, again, it's whether you're talking about Schroeder, whether you're talking about Montrezl Harrell, who also was periodically upset with his role, you know, and how much, you know, he got to play a lot. But like, you know, everybody kind of could see what was going to be coming in the playoffs. And Trez could see it coming too and wasn't happy. You know, I agree with you. I don't think it's fair to point a Schroeder and be like, that's the, you know, it's easy because he's not that likable a player and he's not that likable a guy, you know, certainly compared to some of the other people that were on the 2020 title team. But, you know, I think what a lot of it is context. Like, and the Lakers didn't sign necessarily players that are more talented than Schroeder or more talented than Harrell. Some of that is circumstance because they just were unable to. They didn't have the flexibility. But I do think they looked at context differently this year after last year's experience. And it's not that, like, Schroeder is a guy, it didn't work, but he's a guy going into a really important contract year. And Harrell was supposed to be potentially in a situation where it was the same. Come to the Lakers, play really well, opt out of that last year, go make a big deal at a point in his career where, you know, how many more opportunities like that is he going to get? You know, he's not like old, but he's not 22. So those guys had totally legitimate and understandable external things that were going on around their career that changes the context of how they look at their time with the Lakers. Kent Bazemore, yes, came to the Lakers for somewhat below market value. I think he could have gone somewhere and gotten more than a minimum, but he wasn't in line to earn 25.
No.
And he's not in line to earn 25.
He's already had that deal.
Correct. But he's, you know, he could crush it with the Lakers this year and probably goes out next year and gets part of somebody's mid-level. Like, nobody's signing Kent Bazemore to a $13 million a year deal anymore in his career. That's just not going to happen. And you know, all of these guys are in situations where if they play well, the only way they return to the Lakers is a one-year deal at a minimum, because that's just sort of how the Lakers can't really afford to give any of these guys raises. The exception being Kendrick Nunn, if he plays really well, can opt out of this. set some of that aside. But if Melo plays really well and wants to make more money next year, he's not going to be a Laker. It's sort of these guys are all in this position where they've all pretty much made their money, except for Malik Monk, who we've talked about, and is, if he plays really well, is unlikely to be a Laker next year. But the older guys on the team are in a place where it's okay if they don't play a lot because they want to win and they've made their money and they're kind of near the tail end of their career. They're not trying to get that last big contract and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm not saying talent doesn't matter. I'm not saying that those guys are the reason they weren't good last year, all that stuff that we just talked about. But I do think context makes a difference in terms of how willing people are to accept their roles. And to be fair, with reason. Like if you thought that you had $90 million or $100 million resting on whether or not you got to do X, Y, and Z with your team, yeah, even if you want to win and you're trying really hard, and you can't fault Schroeder for his effort when he played. Like that was not an issue. Or Harrell. Those guys work really, really effing hard. Nobody's going to put that out of their mind. Nobody. And it's unfair to expect them to. So it's nice to not have a bunch of guys who don't have to worry about it. And, you know, it comes with its downside. They're all really old, but it also has upside in terms of how you put this thing together.
Yeah. So we've put it all together in terms of the preseason, and the Lakers went 0-6.
They did.
Is that concerning? Kevin Pelton, great ESPN basketball writer, data guy, et cetera, was open up his own mailbag, and he was asked a question about that. And there were, his answer was at the top, the short answer is probably not. The sentence long answer is probably not because LeBron played just 73 minutes over the three of the Lakers' six games, and the team was plus 17 with him on the court per NBA advanced stats. There was some other stuff in there too about just the correlation between preseason results and regular season results. That there were two elements of that that jumped out at me, just that correlation, but also LeBron's minutes. First, I'll start with LeBron. It felt surprising to me that he was plus 17, just in the sense that it wouldn't have felt to me like anybody was
didn't feel like anything about that preseason lent itself to anybody being plus
17. It's not like LeBron wasn't on the court during periods where they were down, you know, which again happens a lot when you're 0-6. But it got me thinking about like LeBron and, you know, like the question of how teams perform with LeBron on the court versus without. And like, are the Lakers just in this situation where, A, as long as LeBron is on the court, ultimately, big picture, they're covered. B, as we've discussed before, plus minus, net rating, et cetera, all these stuff can be kind of a useless stat with LeBron because the bar with LeBron gets set so high by definition of him being there, it's basically impossible to maintain. C, the stats aren't misleading, and the Lakers still seem like they are really dependent with having LeBron on the floor, or D, all of the above.
All right, I'm gonna try to take this apart, and I mean, if I get them transposed, let me know. A is definitely, I think there's something to A. As long as LeBron is there, they are to some degree covered, because LeBron is LeBron, and that's what he does. What was B?
B was the idea that plus minus net rating, all this stuff can be kind of useless or... You know,
yes, I think that's true. And Pelton makes a great point in this. Like there is actually, I was surprised, there is a sort of loose statistical correlation between preseason performance and regular season performances in ways that he breaks down in the article, and we can tweet it out and you can look at it, except for teams that are supposed to be as good as the Lakers. And once you reach a team that is that good, it's like those things kind of get thrown out the window. And which makes some sense. Like if the Lakers were 1-5, they wouldn't be winless anyway. Like, well, it's like, well, you got to think it's like there's nothing fundamentally different about 1-5 and 0-6 in the context.
No,
of the
except
preseason.
That 0-6, as I've said many times, it's awesome.
It's much cooler.
Glorious. That's calling your shot.
2-4. It's like, nobody's going to remember that. Now they overcame their 0-6 preseason. So, you know, I think the biggest question is C, are they still in this situation where LeBron's presence is the only thing that matters? Like where they can't be good without LeBron on the floor. And that's what we're waiting to find out. And I, to kind of wrap it back up to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show in terms of the offense, I think is also part of the point, which is, can you create a structure that not only works really well when LeBron and AD and Westbrook are all playing together, but also kind of gives them something to lean on and something to understand and do when it's Westbrook and AD, or LeBron and AD, because it's almost always going to be, it's rarely going to be Westbrook and LeBron. And I think that's part of it. I think it will look much different when it's just one.
I mean, I don't want to get deep in the weeds of this, but there was in the sixth preseason game a bit of a stretch with Russ and LeBron.
I'm not saying it won't happen.
No, I'm just wondering. I'm actually wondering how little it actually will happen. We'll see.
We'll see. I think of the combinations where two of the three are playing, I expect that to be the lowest number of minutes.
It might
where,
be. I guess
where it's LeBron and Westbrook without Davis. I think of those, I can't even do the math, of the combinations, that's the one you'll see the least.
We'll see. I mean, the flip side of that before we go is just the idea that if you are going to get LeBron and Westbrook playing off each other as best as you possibly
can, good way to do it.
Best way to learn would be without the security blanket of Anthony Davis.
That's a good way. No, it's true. It's a good way to do it. And we'll see how it goes. But like that is the question. And part of what Russ,
I should say,
part of what Russ was brought in to do was to lighten LeBron's load.
Absolutely.
And not just with LeBron on the floor, but especially when he's not. So you get much more productive second unit minutes and much more productive non-LeBron court time, which hopefully can keep his minutes down at the same time. But this is all stuff to look forward to. Again, thank you for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day. We really appreciate it. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Very excited this week to get talking about real games. We've got some good guests lined up this week and throughout the season. We're going to start bringing those back and really lining up some people, some great voices on the show. Super excited to have everybody with us over the course of the season. We'll see everybody on Tuesday's show.